And a very pleasant good morning. We're now at 8:32. Welcome into the Moberly City Manager's Report. Today we're going to welcome in Fire Chief George Albert. How are you, sir?
Doing good, Bob. How about yourself?
Wonderful. He also wears dual hats as he's the Emergency Management Director for the city. And boy, this time of year where you can stay awful busy on that front, can't you?
Well, we survived the floods. We've had a few rainstorms, and you know the tornado kind of went north and south of us, so we're pretty lucky on that. But we still now we've got the heat that we've got to look at.
All right. Is that a big concern for you? You know what? 2 weeks ago, it was miserable.
The biggest thing I'd like everybody to think about when we have the heat come through is maybe think about cooling stations where they can go to cool off during the middle of the day. And the biggest is think about your family members and your friends, the ones that the elderly that live at home and everything like that. You may want to think about checking on them because they don't get out and they just kind of sometimes it's something bad happens to them.
All right. If you have a question for George, 263-2424 or 800-892-2300. And, you know, this is nothing that has happened even regionally, but I've seen a lot of things nationally. Parents are leaving kids in the car, forgetting about them. You can't do that.
No. I mean, you sometimes wonder how that happens, but, I mean, mistakes do go on. It's real quick. You remember the children are a lot smaller, so they're going to heat up a lot quicker. And then it just, I mean, a car just heats up so fast, people don't realize it. And in just a few minutes could do some damage to a child.
And not only that, animals too, right?
Yeah, the thing about the animals, probably even worse than that, you know, especially when the little dogs like I've got.
Oh, you've got one of the real small ones?
I've got a little Yorkie poo, so.
All right, I'm not going to go
there. No, don't go there.
That's way too easy.
Yeah.
But, you know, we can joke about the heat and that kind of thing, but it's a serious concern. You know, we're going to be in the mid-80s the next, five, six, 7 days or so, but even that can pose some problems.
Especially when you get with the humidity and everything that you got to look at, and just people, you know, they don't think anything about the temperature and they're out working and they get exhausted and, you know, then you've got, you know, your heat exhaustion and the bad part is the heat stroke could actually happen pretty quick.
All right. And that's there are some simple precautionary steps you can take. Number one is make sure you drink enough water.
Definitely stay hydrated and drink water, not alcohol or anything like that. Even some of the power drinks, you got to concern about that because they're high in caffeine. So the water is the main thing that you got to look at on keeping hydrated. And then take breaks when you're outside working. You know, just take a little time, get in the shade for a few minutes and just take a few seconds sort of relax.
And if you've got some concern, if you're feeling some pain, I imagine don't ignore it.
No, the biggest thing, I mean, if you do have something going on, you probably need to get checked out by a physician or something like that, too.
You know, one thing that we talked about in the doctor's office last week, too, with I think it was a nurse practitioner. If you stop sweating, that's when you really got a problem.
Like I said, that's when you're starting to head toward the heat stroke and everything. So you've really got to take some precautions once you stop sweating because that's your body's system of cooling you down is what you're looking at. That's what the sweat's doing. It's cooling your system down.
So, Chief, would it be a good idea for everyone, if they can, to take some kind of basic first aid course?
You know, even just any kind of first aid for anybody. You go back to the old Boy Scout and Girl Scout days when they're just doing that first aid. A lot of that will help people just on minor injuries, controlling bleeding. I mean, a lot of things have also changed in the years on how people would stop bleeding and also just taking care of, like you said, the heat exhaustion or any other medical injury.
And CPR training is not a bad idea.
And CPR, I mean, there's two types of CPR out there. You've got the Red Cross and the American Heart, and both of them, either one would be very good to take for people just to know for your family and around the house.
You know one thing, and I used to be a CPR instructor. My certification lapsed, I think, about a year and a half or so ago to teach that. But one question I always got, well, what if I do it wrong? The response always is, it's better to do it wrong than not do it at all.
And like I said, they've changed it so much just for what we call the lay people to do CPR. It's a quick class that you can actually take. Like I said, either Red Cross or the American Heart Association, look at either one of them. But most of them have got it to where, you know, people are always worried about doing mouth-to-mouth. They didn't want to touch anything.
You don't got to do that anymore.
Don't have to do that anymore. A lot of them are just, you know, check the symptoms, tell someone to call 911. And basically, it's all chest compressions because what they want to do is just try to keep the blood circulating. They're saying there's still enough oxygen in that blood system that you should be okay without even having to do mouth-to-mouth.
I'll tell you the most important thing I learned, too, is that you got to size up your situation. You got to make sure you're safe before you do anything.
Yeah, you got to think about, you know, what we call body substance isolation, you know, BSI. Think about the safety that you're looking for yourself because, you know, body fluids and everything. That's what's going to really scare the people out there. If blood, think about if this person might have been electrocuted. It wasn't actually something with a heart attack, but he may be laying on a bare wire. So you got to look at things like that. Or was it a shooting or something? You want to make sure the area is safe for you. What we call is the scene safe before you start in there. And then, like I said, the biggest part is someone may forget to actually do that 911 call, especially if you're starting to look at children. That's the first thing you're supposed to do, is call 911 right off the bat.
Right, and you don't want to give CPR right in the middle of Highway 63.
No, you definitely want to probably go over somewhere where you can get them on a flat surface and take care of them.
You brought up a great point. I hadn't even thought about talking about this today, but people, out of the goodness of their heart, when they see someone stopped, may want to help, but if there's a power line around, you need to maybe think twice, don't you?
Yeah, like I said, it's what we call, for us, it's scene safety. It's the same thing for, you know, the people. Even if after a storm comes through, one of the things that a citizen actually taught me a long time ago, we had a major storm come through one time, and I was getting ready to go up to their house to check on them, and the guy said, watch the fence. And I kind of said, what are you talking about? Well, it was a chain link fence, and what happened is the power line had fallen down on the back side, and so that it was actually would have been live. And okay, thanks for kind of giving me that information in there, Hank, too. So we made sure we called the power company to get all the power shut off in that area.
And if there's a power line over a car that's been involved in an accident, might want to steer clear.
You know, a lot of people sometimes think it may just be a cable wire, phone line, or anything like that, but they need to take the precaution that is a hot wire that is, and it could actually, it's going to cause that car to be live, and if you touch it, you could actually get a shock, too.
All right, one thing I did, George, about, we've been back here 3 years, so it would have been about 5 years ago, ran safety for a municipal utility. Don't pull the box yourself at a house. Don't pull that meter off. Let a professional do that.
If you're going for the meter, yeah, even firefighters. You know, when I first started, we were taught to pull the meters when we had
a fire.
No, not anymore. They tell us to leave it alone because there's things you got to think about. You may pull that meter, and it actually could still be live. It could be what they call like a three-phase, and there's part of that power that's not actually running through that meter.
That arc flash would not be a whole lot of fun.
I think it would startle somebody pretty quick.
All right. Fire Chief George Albert with us in the live Moberly City Manager's Report. What's it like fighting a fire in this kind of weather, and especially with what we had about 10, 12 days ago?
I mean, the heat, that's something that we've got to consider ourselves. The bunker gear that we're wearing, not only does it protect us from the fire and the heat from the inside, but now that's keeping all that heat that we're letting off on our bodies inside. So we've got to think about the same things. Think about heat stroke, heat exhaustion, because if we have a long fire in this heat, we've got to take time to cool off and everything too.
Do the young guys think they're almost invincible though?
I did when I was young. I think that's just part of being young. And so, yeah, sometimes they don't think about it. And we've got to maybe slow them down a little bit, too, and say, hey, take a little break here so we can continue doing our job.
All right. What's worse, in the really hot weather or the cold, icy weather?
I hated the cold weather. I'll be just flat. I'd rather have the hot weather like this all the time and everything. But the cold weather, because once you get cold, if you stop, then you start back up. Everything's froze up and everything, and then you just can't get warm again.
And what a lot of people forget, Chief, too, is that when water hits the ground and it's cold,
you got the ice that you got to consider the beer laying around, too.
Have you ever had any accidents on ice before?
Nah, I was pretty lucky, actually. I've watched a few guys get hurt just slipping on the ice and everything.
All right. Well, what are some of the really extreme weather conditioned fires that you've had a battle over there? Because I know you came from St. Joe.
We've had the ones in the middle of July and everything like that, too. I mean, we've had the extreme cold when I first started back in 82. That was when Missouri went through that real cold spell. They had like 10 or 12 days consecutively under zero. And there was a few fires that we had out there. We tried to get the fire out as quick as we can. And a lot of that stuff, you got to go back to the station, actually take care of all your equipment because it's all froze over. You can't just roll the hose up and everything there. You got to put it back on the back of the truck and then go there, let it thaw out and clean it up and get it back ready, back in shape.
Yeah, how do you do that? I mean, these hoses, when you get water running through them and it's below zero.
A lot of times, I mean, that's part of the thing that you learn as a firefighter growing up. The older guys, when you say, you know, the guys want to shut the nozzles completely off. Well, during the wintertime, you want to leave them open a little bit. Of course, that's going to cause the ice, but what that'll do is make sure the water's still flowing through the hose so it won't freeze.
Have hoses changed at all over the years?
Oh yeah, a lot of it's changed. We've actually, you know, what we called was the cotton jacket, and that's still probably the most popular one around. But you've also got, you know, you got a plastic, you got a polycarbon type hose that you use too. That's pretty easy. Don't have to clean it up as much, less maintenance. But sometimes they'll get little pinholes in them. But the the cotton jacket's still the one a lot of people use. It's lighter. What I used to use a hand line was called an inch and a half. Now a lot of times guys will use inch and three quarters, so just a little bigger so we get a little more water.
How about SCBA as a self-contained breathing apparatus?
Like I said, when I started back in 1982, a lot of them started coming back in. Technology's changed. They're a lot lighter. They carry a little more air for you. Actually, they've got 60-minute bottles compared to what would be 30-minute bottles when I first started, so they've got a little more time that you can use. They're getting what now? You can actually get like thermal imaging cameras that will be actually on the mask that you breathe.
Oh, on the mask themselves?
They've actually got them on the mask so the guy doesn't have to hold it. So there's a lot of new technology that's coming out and a lot of new safety issues that are to protect the firefighters too.
All right. Would you like to have one of those cameras that are on the mask?
I'm pretty sure my department would like to have a couple of those. So.
How valuable are those? Because I know I saw you guys do some training at the old courthouse downtown about a year ago.
You know, I think people would be really surprised at how valuable those really are because, I mean, granted, you're looking in the dark and in the cold or the smoke and everything, and you can't really see anything, but it cuts because what it's doing is it's reading the body temperature of the person or even just trying to find a fire. Sometimes we can't find the fire, and we'll take our thermal imager, and then we'll see where the hot spot is. It'll be reading maybe 200 or 300 degrees higher than what the room, which should be normal. So, okay, then we'll start taking out the walls or the ceiling to find it, and sure enough, there'll be some fire behind that wall.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people may not realize. A fire's probably been burning a long time before anyone even knows it's going on.
It does. I mean, they start slow, but they're growing faster and hotter now than they used to with the materials of what's inside a house. You know, they're still saying, and I kind of believe it too, a fire will double in size every minute, so you're going pretty quick there.
And when they're inside a wall, that could be a real challenge, can't it?
You got to remember, yeah, because it's hidden, so nobody's going to see it. They'll start smelling it first before they even notice any smoke or anything. So that's one thing. Maybe put a little plug, make sure you got smoke detectors in your house. But you know, back in the 50s, they used to what was called balloon frame construction, and basically what that was is a fire could travel in the wall from all the way from the basement all the way up to the attic because it had an open way all the way up there, so it would take off pretty good.
So how valuable are those smoke detectors?
I'd say they're probably still the number one thing that's going to save lives in a fire situation.
Okay, and we started to talk last year, too. We got about 3-4 minutes left, Chief. We started to talk a little bit last year about the importance of shutting a door.
You're getting I actually took a class just recently down in Lake of the Ozarks, and we were talking about what they call a flashover, when basically everything in the room gets completely heated, and then it all just ignites. And what they were doing is they were opening and closing the doors to show you how the airflow actually works. And there's videos out there and other studies that you can see. If you keep your bedroom door shut, you'll keep your room distance between the fire and maybe your room over 1,000 degrees difference, because a fire is going to get up to about 1,100 degrees before too long. And if you keep that door shut, you'll probably be surprised that actually it'll keep it less than probably about 200 degrees. So, it's still going to burn through after a while, but it could save your life.
So when someone goes to bed at night, should that bedroom door be shut?
Should have their bedroom door shut, yes.
All right. By the way, I wasn't Googling just to be Googling. I couldn't remember what the three elements were. Fuel, heat, and oxygen is what fire needs. Yep. And if you take away one of those, you're not going to have a fire.
And that was the biggest part they were showing with that flashover, because when they would shut the doors, I mean, I was actually inside, and I had a thermal imager, and I was reading between 1,000 and 1,100 degrees flashing over me. And then when they would shut the doors, it would actually drop down in between 350 to 400 degrees that quick. Now, the only thing that was bad is for the firefighter is the smoke then comes all the way down. It comes from the ceiling all the way down to the floor. So you're help shutting off the fire flow, but then now you've got the smoke that you got to tend with.
All right. You mentioned backdraft in there, too. That was a movie from years ago, but that's a real thing, isn't it?
It is. I mean, it's a real thing. It's an explosion is what happens. It's starting, and actually, I've been pretty fortunate never seeing a backdraft. I've went through what they call a rollover. That's kind of like a flashover. But the backdraft is actually some of the stuff is it's trying to suck in oxygen because it's lacking the oxygen to do anything really do. And then once you open up a window or a door or something, then that's when it's going to blow out with some force on it.
So is a fire a living, breathing thing?
Firemen think so. but it is.
Because like you said, it's searching for oxygen.
Yeah, it's looking for stuff to burn up, you know, or if you want to say kind of eat. It's trying to consume materials inside a house, and then also it's got to have oxygen to actually burn.
Okay, how about having a fire extinguisher at home, would that be a good thing for folks?
It is, but the biggest thing is make sure if you're going to have an extinguisher, make sure you know how to use it. That would be the biggest thing. Make sure it's for the proper fire that you're looking at, because like you said, we're talking about the fires. You've got flammable liquids, you've got electrical fires, and then you've got just regular combustible material. So if you're not using the right extinguisher, say you use a water extinguisher on a grease fire, well, that's just going to splatter it all over and cause more damage than anything.
All right, now we got about a minute left in the program. If someone's got a grease fire in the kitchen, what do they do with it?
First, start calling 911 and then try to get a lid over it if possible. That would be the biggest things, so we can get started to come to your scene. Don't try to put the fire completely out by yourself.
All right. Firemen have lit things on fire, too. They know what they're talking about, don't they?
Well, I think that's why we become firemen sometimes.
All right. Yeah. Hey, why did you become a fireman?
I think it was just something that I was looking at, too. I had some friends on the fire department back then, and then it's been a great career. I've always enjoyed it, and that helping people has been some of the other part of it, too.
School's getting cranked up. Do you like getting out to talk to the kids?
That was probably the biggest part I always enjoyed, was the public relations and dealing with the kids and having a good time, trying to teach them a little bit something, too.
All right. Hey, Chief, thanks for being with us.
All right, thank you.
All right, Fire Chief George Albert, he's joined us today in the Moberly City Manager's Report.